Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship-ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Hello and welcome. Devin, would you like to introduce us?
No, I never introduce us. I'm Devin. This is my wife, Morgana. Did you want to help me out with that, or was there more that you wanted to do?
I feel like we've been Penn and Teller.
Oh, for the introductions?
Right.
Yeah, no, totally. This is one of those times where it's like, oh no, let her have the reins, do her thing.
But Teller is the cool one.
Teller is the cool one, without question. Please keep going.
Okay.
I'll be quiet.
Oh, so a funny thing, we were interviewing a guest recently, and after the camera was off and the recording was over, she said to us, "Wow, you two really like each other." And that's,
I think she said it like she was surprised.
Yeah. Well, she said, "That's unusual." And yeah, we really do like each other.
Hence that we're married.
Right. Hence my husband showing up for this show every week when he could be playing Pokemon.
Right. There's so many other things. But thank goodness we have this.
Yeah.
We have this show. And I say that tongue in cheek, but I do. I like that we get to promote a good life after 50, or for somebody who's in midlife. I don't even know what those numbers are, but I'm quite certain 50 qualifies. And I'm actually, I'm approaching 55, which is it's nearing traumatic, but it's fine. Like, it's good. Like, life is really good on so many wonderful levels. So while I'm not necessarily, to do this, but I am enthusiastic about sharing a good life and encouraging others to do the same. So good. So I'll put on a shirt.
Okay. Well, and for 55, I'm still trying to get us to Mexico. But if not Mexico, then Disneyland.
Yes, that's complicated too.
Well, honestly, a day at Disneyland is probably as expensive as a week in Mexico.
It may be. Yeah, no, there's no question. It's are we going to talk about Disneyland? Because I'm happy to.
If you want to.
We can. So I just want to say this. I love Disneyland as a middle-aged guy. Nobody will go with me except for my daughter, who's now a college graduate. So yay, Shay, if you're in the outside chance that you're watching this. She just graduated from the University of Michigan. I'm super proud. And we go to Disneyland, she and I, most every year. I think you went once.
Once or twice. I'm not a good Disneyland person. I loved it when I was a kid.
Yeah, no.
But I still am really only good for the kiddie rides. I'm not a Pirates of the Caribbean is just too much for me. I'm no good for roller coasters. I'm really boring. And then it's a long line to go on some teacups.
All of that.
How did you get stuck with me?
It's remarkable. I'm blown away. At times, how that ever took place. But that all said, life is good. Disneyland is open. I think you have to do some things. You have to jump through some hoops to make that happen. But what I was going to say is, I just like where, for the most part, people who are going there are hoping that it's the happiest place on earth. So they're contributing to the vibe of the happiest place on earth. And a great many people, we were talking about the expense. It's crazy expensive.
But it's beautiful and it is magical.
It's beautiful and it's idyllic. In other words, there's a team of human beings that are working nonstop, a huge team of people that run around, and that place is sparkling clean. always, and it looks nice.
There's
and
not a single brown leaf to be found
anywhere.
Yeah,
there's no brown leaves. There's no some weird flower that looks disturbed. You know, I mean, there's nothing like that. And so what you're paying for is a lot of people to present this notion that there is this kind of beauty, and I love that. I love that, and I want to be around it from, like, you know, usually when my daughter, you know, I wake her up at dawn. And we drive down there in the dark, and we get, I want to be the first guy, and we were never the first person, but I want to be the first person in that place. And when they close around midnight, I want to be like, okay, we can't take it anymore. So, and this
well,
is
now
not
that
a
she's
Disneyland
out of college, she might be around to go to Disneyland.
We've already, it's already been discussed. So it's not like you have to plan ahead. No, the moment I'm like, hey, sweetie, you're going to be in town.
Congratulations on your graduation.
Yeah, right.
I have a birthday coming up.
Right, exactly. Well, no, she has a graduation gift coming up.
Okay.
So we'll probably almost certainly go to Disneyland, and that will almost certainly be a day that Morgana will sleep in. Talking about crazy and sexy midlife love, she will be nowhere to be found on that particular day. And it's fine.
Sleep is very good for the sexy.
I think I'm not even complaining. I think it's just kind of one of those things that it is. You know, one of the mature things about, you know, love is that we don't have to look for differences. And even if we were to and found these differences, that it wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, she doesn't like Disneyland. How could she not like Disneyland? We have to break up tomorrow. I'm calling my lawyer.
It's not that I don't like it. It's just,
no, yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to convince you. I think it's like, it's not for everybody. I totally get that. The vast majority of my friends are like, what? You want to go, what? And I'm like, yes, I want to go. And so I have a handful of friends, like a small smidge of people that are like, we love it. We go once a year or whatever. We go twice a year or something. And then there's a couple of people who buy those like season passes where they're just going every day.
You have to make it worth it, really.
Well, and that's what they do. They go all the time and they get discounts on parking and stuff. And by the way, this is not a plug for Disneyland. It is crazy expensive.
You should be getting a free ticket just because we're giving them a plug.
Right. Well, we're not. That's not their bag at all. They are.
Because I'm sure you've tried that.
Well, they're a corporation. They're a big, big corporation. And somebody is there counting all of the beans. And so, you know, without question. I mean, I think you get a nice service and you get a great day.
Well, and you brought up an interesting point. Like, oh, she doesn't like Disneyland. I'll break up with her. And years back, you know, our friends Lynn and Bob broke up because she's an extrovert and he's an introvert, just like you're an extrovert and I'm an introvert. And it's interesting to me, like you like to go out a lot and you're able to go out safely now more than before. And you're okay with me not accompanying you to things, and I'm okay with you going off and having a good time. And so it's not an issue for us. And I just keep thinking about, because we do have our issues, but I love what John Gottman says, and you've brought this up before, that studies have shown that relationships that fall apart usually because of 5 to 7 irreconcilable differences.
Right. 5 to 7 things. And it doesn't matter what the things are. They're just things.
And they can be huge and they can be little.
That you can't reconcile. That just means, in other words, at some point, you're just going to have to go, okay, that's what it is. Right. Yeah. You don't like her family. You don't like her friends, whatever.
And so the relationships, the marriages that fail have those 5 to 7 things. The relationships and the marriages that go on forever and are super happy and loving have 5 to 7 irreconcilable differences that will never be agreed upon.
Right. And that's just the way it is. So at some point, a person is presented with this idea of, I'm either going to accept those 5 to 7 things. And by the way, there's always more other things too. You know, I mean, there's fights that happen spontaneously about a particular circumstance. We're talking about a stuff that's just like, it's not going away.
Yeah.
So it's your choice. And by the way, our 5 to 7 things are not the same. I don't even know what her 5 to 7 things are. I don't really care.
I can't even think of that many. I know of like one or two, and it's more like one and a half because only one of them really bothers me.
Right. So, but the point is that, so she does things that annoy me that are, they're not going away.
You probably get 9 to 10 just to, you know, maybe the 5 to 7 things are not evenly distributed.
No, they're not. No, they're absolutely not. I have 13 and you have 1. That's what it is. So that just means I am saint. In case anybody at home was wanting to know, please, please pray for me. But I mean, so here's the thing. So that's a choice. A choice. That's what a relationship in part is. It's sort of like a recognition. We're as a dear friend of mine likes to put it, we're all sick children of God. Mm-hmm. And I like to believe that we're these imperfect souls and trying to figure it out and sort of evolve into sort of a more harmonious individual, a more accepting person. And I think that's, you know, I think that's part of the deal.
Oh, and we have Andrew on line one.
Do we have
Andrew,
a caller?
Okay. Can you believe it? How nice. No, hey, Andrew.
Hi, I thought I'd come join you guys and say a quick hi to one of my two favorite people in Long Beach. So.
And I know which Andrew this is. Hello. Hi. How are you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing all right. And Devin knows me too, so
I'm about 85% sure, but I don't want to confirm a last name while we're, you know, online or something.
I don't mind if you say my full name on air, because you know I'm an actor as well. So
Andrew Mondia, everybody, yes, okay. Welcome to the house.
Good to hear from you, Andrew. I hope your life is well.
It's okay. I've been healing from a brain injury, but it's made me think about believing more in myself and being the God of me. And so it's just it's gotten me to go more inward with myself, but. I just came on. I'm like, it's like 10 after. I'm like, I want to get on and say hi to Devin and Morgana, because I saw your emails about, you know, wanting more colors. And I'm like, okay, I got to get on and be there to support you guys. And
thank you.
That's very kind of you. Thank you.
I have a question, if you don't mind, if you're comfortable sharing. How long? I had a brain injury back in 1983, so I know what that's like, and I may know some of the stuff that you're going through. How long ago was your injury?
Well, I was in a car accident back in October through my part-time job as a school a school driver, and right now it's just the concussion symptoms that I'm dealing with, and. I finally went through, got all through the insurance assessments, and it's just, you know, it requires a lot of patience and being, you know, a lot of self-care with yourself. And you know, even without the brain injury, everyone should learn, we all should have self-care with ourselves.
Yeah.
But before you leave that idea, can you kind of say more about self-care for yourself? What does that mean? And maybe what kind of practices you may have taken up in order to support that for you?
Well, I you know, it's about listening to your body, really, I think. You know, just being in tune. I mean, I still have challenges because I like to be very active, you know, like with you guys traveling. I love to travel myself. I mean, as Devin, you know, because...
Right, we've talked about that. We've talked about that before.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, and for me, it's about being still. And, you know, like this morning, I finally started to get back into a bit of Vipassana meditation. Where I was just in quiet, I sat in quiet stillness for like half an hour just to meditate. And so I can, cause you know, oftentimes we have our brain, well, our ego will start to take hold and, you know, and for me, it's like if I'm still and I clear my mind, then I can have a more clear picture as to what mm-hmm. needs to be done. I mean, some of the stuff I couldn't even, like, at the beginning, I can't really, like, go on, like, Zoom calls that much. Doing anything that is overtaxing to the brain, like reading a book, it's like still a challenge for me, and just recognizing that, you know, some things are just having to put on hold. I mean, I even have to put on hold writing my my own memoir of how I survived wanting to die when I was 13. And because, like, you know, every time I go to write something, I'll just write like a few lines and then I'll stop. And it's like, okay, it's not the time. The time and understanding.
It's your brain is exhausted. The good news is that, by the way, just the effort of reading or just the effort of writing those two sentences is so good for your brain. We're really lucky now. We know that our brains have neuroplasticity and are adaptable and get to rewire and regrow really late into life. So, but that exercise, and when I had my brain trauma, I would read a paragraph and need to go to sleep because I was just so exhausted. I would read a page and I couldn't remember what I'd read. So the worst thing about a head injury is that it's invisible. So it looks like you're fine to everybody else, but you never let how you appear to other people fool you into forgetting just how hard your body is working to repair. Please, fish oil. Fish oil is so good for your brain, as are blueberries. Blueberries grow brain matter. So, you know, feed your brain fish oil and blueberries, probably not together.
Because it wouldn't be delicious.
It would taste terrible.
Well, right. I imagine blueberries and fish oil in a blender. Doesn't sound like a smoothie.
I could imagine
you making that smoothie with enough kale and cocoa butts.
Yeah, no, I'd probably do that. I would do
that. I haven't taken fish oil, but then I just switched to a vegan omega-3 product I'm trying out to see how that is. So it's okay.
Walnuts are healthy. I do believe that fish oil just has so many things besides just the omega that is just food for the brain. But if you're vegan, then of course honor your own values.
Oh no, I'm not vegan, but I saw this and I thought
you just didn't want fish breath because you're not a cat.
Well, it's not that I'm not a cat. I love salmon, actually. I'm a huge salmon lover. Unfortunately, I have to be careful because of another medical condition I have. And I thought, you know what, I'll try this, but I might go back to the fish oil because I just have to see, maybe use a pendulum and see, okay, is this the right product for me? And it's like, no. it's just really interesting going through this process. And one thing I discovered is on Clubhouse, there's actually a brain injury support group. Whether you've had one or you know someone that's had one or you're going through it, on Wednesdays at 3 there's at my Eastern, there's a support group on Clubhouse. I was like, oh my god, I was like, I cannot believe it. So
I think I've been in some of those rooms and they have a lot of great doctors, so I think that's a super good place for you. And what I really hope for you, Andrew, is that some hidden gift comes out of it. Like, I wouldn't wish this on anybody, having been through it. You know, I've been on that ride, don't want to go on that again. I did find that my intuition really kind of blossomed during the recovery. So, yeah, I always set the intention of, like, unintended good consequences. So I wish that for you. Are you there?
We may have lost Andrew.
Okay.
Well, Andrew, it was great to hear from you, and we wish you only the best.
Yeah.
Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you so much for calling.
So that was a nice surprise.
That was. What a sweet man. He's the one who helped me with my book launch.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So where were we?
Oh, so we were talking about Disneyland. We were talking about your daughter. We were talking about aging.
We were talking about aging and Disneyland and things opening back up. I mean, that's a whole separate issue. But I know that we had some other questions
this week,
just from folks who had written.
Yeah, there were some things that I promised we would talk about and a couple of questions that came in that I want to address. Before we launch into that, I also want to acknowledge that for 10 years and 10 retreats in Bali, on the last day of the retreat, after, because it would be a week-long retreat, and on Friday, the last day of the retreat, after all the heavy lifting was done, all the hard work was done for a treat, kind of like a spiritual dessert, I would take my women to this Balinese healer, sort of a royal witch doctor, Chakota Rai. And he had been 93 for a lot of years, so not sure exactly how old he was, but he was the real deal. He was so sweet. And it was always in a public setting, because I've heard some people have had some not good experiences with some other people in not so public safe settings. And that happens everywhere in the world. But Chakota was always just so kind. And there was something really, truly magical about him. And he would, you know, just touch the head and poke the toes of every person. And he could, and his, like, his magic was with his hands. He would feel what was wrong with you by poking your head. And then he would take a little stick and poke your toes, and it'd be like, dun, 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 ouch. And then he'd say, oh yeah, that's what this is, in his very limited English, very heavy accent. And then he would start doing all sorts of like wild things with his hands and drawing patterns in the air or drawing patterns on your body to like reorient things. But he did it totally different with every person. And sometimes he would go, I can't find anything wrong with you. Why are you here? What do you want from me? In like the sweetest, cutest way. So he wasn't, I was really always impressed by his integrity, that he wasn't just putting on a show. If he couldn't find anything wrong, he was like, I can't find anything wrong.
That was me, by the way. I just want to say that.
Well, I
apropos of nothing.
Apropos of nothing.
Right. But there was, yeah.
Well, anyway, I bring him up because I just heard from a friend of mine in Bali that he passed. And I kind of felt it was coming. I was thinking of asking my driver if Chakota was still alive, especially over the last year. But I just saw before the show that he passed. And all I can say is he led a great life. Big family. He was, you know, really loved. And I feel very grateful that I got to experience him. You know, that what a gift to have been introduced to him, to have been able to experience him so many times, to share him with women on my retreat. So, you know, that's just a special thing. And I just wish him a beautiful send off into, you know, what's next for him. So thank you, Chakota Rai. And on that happy note, Devin, did you have anything you wanted to say besides gloating about being the special one?
No.
You know, okay.
No. I mean, I think he was a nice man who served a very important purpose. So.
Yeah. So happy Cinco de Mayo, everybody. And I received this question that I promised to address on the show. The question came in, could you share more about being married 25 times in 20 countries in the last 7 years? There are three questions, so I'll go through the next two. What worked in your relationship, and did you have relationship goals and agreements? So So, Devin, would you like to share more about being married 25 times in 20 countries in the last 7 years?
Well, I mean, honestly, it's for me, it's one of those things that I'm not a huge fan of weddings per se. But what I am a fan of is that it brings us closer, and it brings my wife great joy, right? Like obviously it gives her great joy, because really what's happening, it's less about, I think, I mean, there's certainly a celebratory aspect to it. And certainly as a traveler, there's a traveling aspect to it. And certainly in many of the places we've gotten married, there's like part of their culture that's going on. And many times there are participants from this country that we happen to be in. And all of those things are really fantastic pluses. Like, I love all that stuff, right? But I think saying vows is a reminder to your partner that all of those things that you said years ago are still valid. Right. It's a reminder, because I believe is that we have this one special day. Most people get married like to their person one time. And I'm not talking about people who get married multiple times or things like that. But the vast majority of people have this like one day, and it's like, OK, we're legally married, and that's great. Right. And I think there's probably important rules involved. But really what it is if somebody's been married for a really long time, I think it's very easy to sort of become detached from the other person in a way, just because life takes over. Like, the day that you got married is incredibly special, right? And then there's a picture on the mantle. Oh, look how young we looked, all those kinds of good things. And then time marches on, right? We go back to our lives. Maybe we're raising kids. Maybe we're not. Maybe we're going through struggles. Maybe we're not. We're going through life, right? And that whole, you know, all the things that happened to us. And so I think it's easy to forget how special that day was, unless you live that day a lot. And so the 25 times in 7 years is really much more about, you know, for the most part, I mean, you know, when we're not in a pandemic, it's about reinvesting in the vows and reminding the other person, this is why we're together. I want that idea to be in the foreground, not in the background of something that happened many, many moons ago. I want that something, not only do I want it in the foreground, I want my wife, who's sitting right here, and it's not a secret, I want her to go, oh, where are we getting married next? I want that, because there is an excitement to that that I think is an incredibly useful tool, not in terms of manipulation, but just in terms of hope. I want her to feel great. I want her to feel strong. I want her to know that we keep doing this thing. Wow, he must like me if he's willing to do this thing that he really doesn't even like that much, which is all, but by the way, it's all good stuff. In other words, for me, it's just, If you're in a committed relationship, there should be goodwill. And to me, these weddings are really about reinforcing the goodwill that we share between the two of us and repeating it over and over and over again, right? As much as possible. Because I think that's a really good thing. And so that's why we're doing it. You know, the 7 years, I guess we're closing in on eight, like this month.
No, this... May 23rd is our 7th anniversary.
Okay, so we're not even there yet.
Right.
But the point is that you get the idea, is that we're nurturing an idea a lot. We're trying to nurture this idea. In terms of what works, and what other pieces do we want to answer that question?
I want to chime in.
Yeah.
Because, you know, remember the 5 to 7 things that you don't agree on.
Yes.
2 for me, 35 for Devin.
I thought it was 1.5, but I must have done something partially during our conversation.
So, yeah, the refocusing on love. And, you know, let me just point out the kindness, the generosity of spirit, the romance of the person that I'm with. So if I'm going to go through life with somebody that there are going to be disagreements, who is the person? Like, that is fundamentally the most important piece to me is my husband is a good man. He's kind. I see him be kind when nobody's looking, to everybody, you know, and he's service oriented and he's wise. He's also fun to be with. And there's just so much that I wouldn't find with anybody else. And if I tossed him aside because I'm really angry about this thing that we can't fix, I would probably scour the earth looking for someone who has what Devin has.
Good luck.
Look, 45 years, I didn't find it until I found you.
Right. So good.
And on Devin's side, he would have to divorce me 25 times and jump down to the bottom of the river in Slovenia, Ljubljana, find the key to unlock our love. And he can't swim well.
I'm not a swimmer.
No.
Yeah, not my thing.
So he's stuck.
Right.
I wasn't even really down for one wedding. To me, that was just like, hey, I'm 47 years old, and that's just too much stress, you know, and expense. It's different when I was in my 20s and mommy and daddy were going to like pay for it and do all the work, and it would be just the party and I'd be the princess. But if I also had to put it together, it was just like I could buy a house with that money. So I was just such a romantic joy kill that way. I just wanted to be married. That was my bucket list, happily married, because I'd never done that before. Devin is my first 25 husbands. And it was just this thing that I've been yearning for since I was four, is my person, my life partner. And as I evolved and the vision evolved, I wanted to travel the world with the love of my life. I wanted it to be the right person, because I come from three or four generations of divorce. And in my family, I just saw everybody struck out on the first marriage, but really got it on the second. So I made a decision in the second grade when I was 7 years old that it would be more efficient. And this is how I thought as a 7 year old, it would be more efficient to skip the first marriage and simply marry my second husband. So I waited. And I backed out of a number of engagements because I kind of knew that they were going to end, that they weren't going to work. I could see the expiration date until I met Devin, and I just never saw the expiration date. So I made a decision about a year into the relationship that when he asked, I would say yes. And then I stopped thinking about it. And 6 months later, he asked, and I freaked the heck out because I thought it was going to be a few more years, and I was really happy and safe and content with the way things were, and I was terrified that marrying would ruin everything. And it actually made it sweeter for me in my experience. It took it to a level of commitment that I didn't know was still there to be, and that's kind of nice. I call him husband, like, which is weird. If I was reading a screenplay, I would say nobody talks like that. But I talk like that because I think it's cool. It's just fun to me that he's my husband. Who would have thunk it that I would get married at all after 40, you know, at 47 for the first time? So part of all these weddings, you know, for me is, well, I'm just making up for lost time. But it is really good for me. You know, it's good to be reminded that I'm loved. And insider tip, when you keep having weddings, it takes the pressure off of all of them. One wedding is a dud, big deal. You can get married next week somewhere else, you know? So that really putting all that pressure on that one day just seemed like not nice for a little baby marriage. It just seemed like too much pressure for a little baby growing marriage. I thought maybe in a year or two, once you know, we have some roots, maybe we'll have a big wedding. And some of the weddings have accidentally been big. But it's always, always, always really about the vows. It's about the relationship. It's about us. And the marriage is the prize. You know, the wedding serves the marriage. It's not really about the wedding itself. You wanted to jump to the next question, which
I mean, what was it? It's what worked.
Yeah, what worked in our relationship? Well, I'm curious to hear.
I don't know if I have an answer to that. I mean, I think the vast majority of things work. In other words, we're not fighting about it. I'm assuming it's working. I'm kind of leaning over, reading the question.
Because we're middle-aged.
Right, because we're middle-aged and I'm not wearing glasses. What worked? I mean, I would say most things. In other words, I think she's cute and charming and funny and all those kind of real basic things. I think she has good values. I think she has a good heart. I think she thinks about things. And I think we aligned with certain values. And then, of course, there's 5 to 7 things, which, you know, at some point, you just have to navigate. And I don't think we're supposed to not be navigating. I mean, when I look back at my own self, and this is my own theory, is that when I look back at relationships that were sort of otherwise good, I think a lot of it had to do with just my ego, that somebody wasn't living up to some sort of a standard that I didn't even know existed until I was annoyed. And then I made the standard to say, well, but the standard, and you're down here. And it wasn't really fair to me or anybody else. And I think that when I speak to clients, that happens a lot. That there wasn't
some
overriding.
And can I just say how grateful I am that you did that so that you were available for me when I showed up?
Well, yeah. I mean, but, you know, again, the reason why that works is because I had to start taking responsibility for my own stuff. You know what I mean? I had to acknowledge. In other words, I had to acknowledge that there was a problem to allow change to take root. Right. And more importantly, the slight shift in perception leads to great change. And a friend of mine, Pat Hummel, says that quite a bit, which I love. And so I think it's a process. I think you get to a place where you can go, oh, the 5 to 7 things. Maybe they would have, you know, mortified me 3 years ago, but now it's just part of the thing. Right. It's part of the thing I have to look towards and work on and grow and learn from. Rather than allow it to tear us down, which you can't.
Well, there were some things that I thought would be deal breakers on my list, like and they actually churned out when they showed up early in our relationship to have the opposite effect, that the things that I thought I wasn't looking for actually made you a better human being just because of the way you took on those life challenges. And then there's one other thing that was probably the top of my list is a deal breaker. But in the context of the rest of you and just who you are and my like respect and admiration and adoration for you, it's just like, well, ha ha, universe has a sense of humor. And obviously that's here for a reason as a spiritual challenge for me. Not that I was seeking one out, but it's just like I'm stuck because I choose you. So I just, that's just part of like for us to work out.
So question 3 was, did you have relationship goals agreements? Did you want me to answer that?
Yeah.
No. You know, I don't think of it in terms of goals. I mean, I think there are certain kinds of goals.
Besides 100 weddings.
Right. Well, I guess that's a thing. Sure. But I mean, if that does, right. In other words, the relationship goals, what's the relationship goal? To not break up, to be, to have a sense of purpose and contentment, i.e. that I'm actually doing the things that have purpose. But that's not something I get from her. Do you know what I mean? That's something that happens within me that I either go after or I don't go after, I do well with, or sometimes I fail with or whatever. But that has nothing to do with the relationship. So there's really more personal goals. So I don't want to break up. What are the others? I mean, the other kinds of goals I can think of as well, you know, raise a family. Well, that's, again, these are sort of like choices. But in terms of the relationship, I don't know if we strive as a duo to achieve things per se. I don't think that's, you know, because part of the problem is that in my own personal life, when I've set goals and attained them, they didn't fix anything. Mm. It was just like, oh, okay, so I have this other thing. Oh, my goal is to have a new car. Okay, great. So I saved money. I got a car. It's great. I loved it. And then at some point, you just have to pay for the car every month. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, but and now I have a car. So it's not like I can be forever thrilled that I have a car, because at some point the new car is not no longer a new car. So it's that's kind of the way I see it. I mean, I think really the relationship goal is to roll with the punches, right? It's these kinds of things that deal with notions, for me anyway, fortitude and consistency and being a soft landing, right? Because Morgana's going to have something happen in her life that's challenging. And so really my goal in that moment is try to soften the blow as best I can, which I may not be able to do depending on where she's at. And she may not be able to do that for me, right? Stuff's going to go down. Can she fix it? No. No, she can't. Because sometimes I just have to take action in the moment. Mm-hmm. But the goal can be, I want to be there and be of support, but I can't fix things and I can't make somebody else. I mean, this is, again, this is just sort of my 54-year-old self sort of riffing on this idea of goals. But I mean, I think for the most part, I just, you know, I want to lead a good life and hopefully support the goals and visions of my spouse. And that's sort of it, because the rest of it is a wild card.
Well, I really am so glad you went first, because you really framed it for me, is that a goal is sort of like saying the happiness or the success is over there. And my experience of this relationship is I've always liked where we are, which is why I freaked out when Devin proposed marriage. But I felt like it was an invitation to grow and evolve. And I'd already decided I was going to say yes. So I said yes. And then Devin wanted to live together. Seriously, we continued to live in our own homes for our first year of marriage.
Which was fine for us.
Oh, so much fun. I loved my place. You loved yours. It was really easy. Every single night was date night, his place or mine. And then Devin wanted to ruin everything, so he suggested that we consider living together at some time in our marriage.
I'm the worst.
So the worst. Well, the thing is, whenever Devin suggests something, it's like my brain goes into overdrive. Okay, how do we do this? I have like this deep-rooted compulsion that I just sort of like, Devin wants something, I want him to have it. And sometimes that gets us into trouble, because he doesn't realize the effect it has on me of him saying, oh, I want this. And I'm like, okay, how do I make that happen? I want Devin to have everything he wants that's good for him. And so we bought a house, and we're still together. Ha ha. What, how many years now? 6 years of living together, I guess.
Right. A little more.
Yeah. It's, you know, good numbers. So for me, goal is really, I want to be there for Devin. I want him to have I want him to fulfill his, his best self. I want to support and help him be who he wants to be. And because I think he's the coolest person in the world. Like he's my person. I want to say my thing, my it, my everything, you know, not my everything, because I have a life, but he's my favorite person. And I like him. In terms of agreements, we at some point came up with an agreement, maybe during one of our wedding vows, because they're always, you know, of the moment, and I never planned mine. But I think at one point we vowed to be nice to each other, even when we want to kill each other, which is a really useful agreement.
That's a good agreement.
Yeah. Because the anger is really just love feeling frightened. And when the fear passes, you really don't want to have done too much damage, because the love is still there. So that would be goals. Do not destroy the marriage.
That's a good goal. You know, I remember during my last breakup, where a friend of mine who I haven't seen in years said to me, he goes, if you love her, you want for her to have what she wants, even if that's not you. And so I thought about it. And by the way, I hated him when he said it. Like, how dare you? I'm in pain, or whatever it was that I was feeling. I mean, I was certainly upset. And so really my takeaway from that, in many ways, it was liberating. When I really started thinking about, well, what does that actually imply? It implies that I'm to support her regardless of what the thing is, because that is love. The love is an act of service. It's an action, right? And it's an act of service to the person that you love. Because if I'm waiting for the person I love to love me back, to give me stuff, to validate me or give me special consideration, all of those things, it really isn't love. It's actually a negotiation, right? Well, I'll love you, but you need to love me back, and you need to give me whatever it is. You need to fulfill me. Or the worst one is, you need to fix it. And that's a brutal one, right? Because that's part of the negotiation. We'll be here together and we'll fight through this, but you need to give me these things so I can justify being here or staying with you or something else. And I think it gets weird. And so I think what we do is we try to love freely and give freely of our hearts to the person. And so, again, going back to the weddings thing, is that we keep doing it because it really is much, much more about the freely giving of love for love's sake. So when we talk about vows, my vows aren't, I will help support you in these goals as long as you give me the things that I want.
Well, that brings up a really funny point. Was the first time we got married, I was in Bali finishing up my retreat, and Devin was in South Africa on his photo safari, and Devin proposed and came up and said, I heard him say, make a list of everything you want, you know, from me. And so I showed up at our elopement with my list of everything I wanted from him. And then he put me in my place by reciting his list of everything he wanted for me. I had misheard him. So,
but you were prepared in your own.
I'm a good homework person.
Special way.
Well, so like all the weddings, I'm so glad we got do-overs, because it's actually way, way, way more fun to make lists of everything that I want for the person I love. Was there anything else that I wanted to say? Yes, but I forgot. So back to you, Devin.
Well, I mean, I don't know what else is. I think that was sort of the main question. So the general answer is, you know, getting married is a useful tool to help keep things sort of on the surface, sort of like love first. I think that what worked in the relationship was a whole lot of things. And I think, by the way, if you're at home and you're in a relationship and the list of the things that are not working is a really long one, or you've forgotten, like, first, I would really kind of, you know, find what you love from that person from the beginning. Like, what was it when you guys were really high on each other, and start really, you know, looking at those things, and then it becomes, how can you recreate it and get those things back? And so I think that's really the part. Like, so if you've forgotten what's working within the relationship, sit down and write it down. And maybe you might have to go back to, well, you know, in year one, we did these things. Maybe you need to start recreating those things and maybe start forgiving and those other things, because it's tricky. And then, did you have relationship or goal agreements? For the most part, no. I mean, again, I go back to my goal, and this is one of the things that I talk to clients a lot about, is that if you are in a relationship, and if, let's say, it's not working, or maybe you're just dating, right? You're casually dating, you're having a great time with the world. That's fantastic. Congratulations. Many blessings. I think while you're getting to know that person, that you keep sort of like What are the mindful goals for yourself within the relationship? Oh, I want to be, and that you can actually accomplish. Like, I can't make somebody be happy or change for me or do whatever the things that we want them to do, but I have control over me. So the things that I focus on is like, well, I can be of love and service. I can show up when things are difficult. I can try to have compassion even when I don't. I can try to, I can try to smile when I don't want to. And maybe smile is maybe the wrong thing, but I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, how do I try to keep this thing sacred, because there's 7 billion people on the planet and I'm choosing this one person. So if I'm dating them, even if the relationship isn't going to work, even if you know, like, okay, we'll probably be dating for another 3 months, I think it's probably really important to keep putting your best foot forward anyway. Even if you're going to be breaking up, I'm breaking up tomorrow, I still think you put your best foot forward no matter what happens, because I think it's great practice when you're going to be dealing with the real thing.
Yeah, right? That's how I approach dating, because everybody had an expiration date above their head before Devin. And sometimes it was just, you know, it was just practice. Practice letting a nice person be nice to me and appreciate their company. There was one guy maybe a year before I met Devin who I really, really liked, even though he had huge red flags. And it's not surprising that it ended at 3 months. Like, everybody ended at 3 months if they got beyond a date or 2 weeks. And I liked him and I wanted to see more of him. And his response was he was having a great time, but he didn't love me and didn't think he ever would. Which really shocked me, because I was really surprised. I thought we were kind of on the same page. And I'm grateful to him for being honest like that. And that was the last conversation we ever had. And I said, thank you. Thank you. I needed to know that. And I wished him well and ended all contact. And because of that, I was available for someone who could love me. And so if you're seeing somebody who's really into you, but you're not, please be honest. And I actually was writing about this recently in response to a friend who was out in the dating world and getting rejected a lot, a guy. And like, I hate rejection. It hurts. I also really deeply believe that it is protection. It is divine protection to keep you free and available for your person. Never, ever, ever settle for someone who doesn't love you. And if you're not doing, and if you are the person who's with somebody that you don't love, you aren't doing that person any favors, because that person is lovable. You are just not their person. And the nice thing about like having so many scars and broken hearts and being, you know, all the slings and arrows of outrageous dating is that when you do meet your person, you recognize it in a way that we might have wasted this opportunity 10, 20, 30 years ago. And we weren't the same people 10, 20, 30 years ago. So we met at the right time as the right people, which is the gift of midlife love. Devin, what would you like to say?
Oh, I don't know. I think I've said a mouthful already.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to get to some other pieces. We had this other show planned.
Total other show planned.
And then the fantastic Andrew called. And so.
Well, I wanted to, and maybe we'll do that in 2 weeks because we have a really fabulous guest next week. But I wanted to kind of go over favorite moments from like brilliant things that guests on our show in the past, Ariel Ford, Rhonda Britton, Carol Allen, our astrologer, who we brought in twice because she was so popular, Dr. Gary Salyer.
Yeah, Gary's great.
Last week's Precious, if you haven't seen last week's show, jump to that as soon as we get off the air. Precious Pauling is Devin's favorite guest of all time.
Like, I think so.
Every like word from her mouth, it was just like dropping poetry. She's just so wise and just has such a beautiful way with words, and raw and fun, and just a real treat. We're going to have her again. So I will say something that I've heard Carol say, and she might have talked about it on her first appearance on our show about a year ago, is that love is kind of looking at each other through rose-colored glasses. Like, you really do need to distort. You can distort and see everything is bad, or you can kind of blind yourself to the irritating stuff and just totally obsess over how like cute and handsome and charming and kind and affectionate and adorable Devin Gallaudet is, which I like to do a lot. We have about 90 seconds. Did you have any last thing to say?
No, I ran out of steam.
Okay. I'll just kiss you up later. Okay. So next week, we have very, very different vibe. We have the confrontationalist Danielle Gibson. So if,
oh, yeah.
Right? So especially for us women who may shy away from those difficult conversations as if they are worse than death, and I'm raising my hand.
So we'll be getting into a fight to prove a point.
Exactly.
Oh, good. I'm so...
To the death.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
So we'll be learning how to have those difficult conversations to get what you want instead of what you think you can get. That is next week's show of Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. We are here every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific time at BBS Radio. And be sure to go to crazysexymidlifelove.com. to join the Crazy Sexy Midlife Love family and download Devin's book, Women Are Smarter Than Men.
Because they are.
Because we are. And he's smart enough to recognize that.
That is one of my strengths.
So we love to receive your emails. We love having questions to focus on the shows. We love it when you call in, and we love you. And we will see you again next week. Mwah.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.